the people that we praise who have failed many times are the ones who persevered and eventually got it.
There's no virtue in that suffering, but there is virtue in having fun.
Should we consider it virtuous to be totally independent?
These are hardworking people. They're blowing off steam from the struggle. Give them a break. Philosophers.
Philosophers.
So, David, what are we leaning back in our armchairs about today?
The struggle.
The real one?
Yes.
Oof.
It's not delivery. It's to struggle.
I hate that. I hate that. It's not delivery. The struggle.
You're welcome.
The struggle bus. What about that struggle? What about that grind set? Tell me about it.
Oh my goodness. I hate that term so much.
I do too. I almost went to look up the definition of the struggle instead of struggle for this. That would have been awful. All right, so what struggle are we talking about?
The one when you run out of moves in Pokemon. No, not that one.
Oh.
So specifically, I think our listeners know what struggling is, more or less.
I think it's safe to say that everyone has struggled before.
Right.
Or you would have a time in your life that you would refer to with by that word, and that's the word we're talking about.
Right. So I don't think we need to go into great detail defining struggling or which form we're talking about. I think the real topic of this episode is it virtuous to struggle? Why do we glorify people who have struggled?
Yeah, that's a good question. First, I would say, do we glorify people who struggle? I think it's pretty self-evident, but there are, I think, some pretty concrete examples in the modern mythos about struggling, you know. If you're from a culture that has like Christian elements, there's a lot that goes into like struggling in that.
I feel like that's less about struggling and more about suffering, which are different things.
That's an important distinction to make before we go into this.
Struggling does usually involve some kind of suffering.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I would say you're probably not struggling if you're not suffering a little bit. But yeah, I think that the Christian virtue is just in the suffering. The sacrifice.
Like full Job?
Yeah. Why? Let's talk about Job.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Job. What about Job?
So the story of Job, we're not going to read the story.
Oh, man.
It's a little bit long
also,
for this show.
Yeah.
It's a pretty messed up story.
What happens to the poor man? Yeah.
So there's this guy. His name is Job. He is God's most loyal follower or something like that. Or at least a very loyal follower anyway. And our good buddy Satan decides to challenge God and says, I bet I can make him betray you. And God says, sure, do whatever you want, but you can't hurt his person, right? You can't hurt him or kill him.
Right.
And so then he like basically goes through all these stages of destroying everything that he has, but without hurting him. But he doesn't forsake God. He still praises God through the whole time, even though he's lost everything. And then finally God says, okay, finally, Satan says, okay, I bet if you let me hurt him though, he would. And God says, okay, fine, you can hurt him too. And so then he gives him all these horrible diseases and stuff like that. And he gets, you know, to the brink of death. He loses his wife and kids and all of this. Anyway, he completes the challenge, so to speak. He doesn't cave. And God says, okay, good job, Job, my loyal servant. I will give you a new family and such. We're just going to... I know you might miss the old one, but here you go.
Here's an upgrade.
Hope it's good enough. We're not going to bring back the old ones, but here you can get a new one. No.
I'm sorry, Satan broke your iPhone 14. Here's an iPhone 15, though.
Yes. So that's the story of Job. So he suffered, and it was all just a game that God and Satan were playing to test his loyalty.
Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, I am looking at it. So Job is referenced in several other of the monotheistic religions. I think these are all monotheistic. I don't recognize the last one, but in Judaism, Christianity, he has a specific mention in Mormonism or in the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, the director's cut.
Yeah, the director's cut. Okay. He's also mentioned in his Islam. Now, what's interesting is their takes are a bit different, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if this is what we're going into today, but in Judaism, he is cited as someone who, quote, held fast to all the ways of justice, whereas in Christianity, he's praised for perseverance, which is kind of the same thing. In Islam, it's particular that it's called out that he was one who was just afflicted with suffering. Like, that's just the main point, is that he suffered a lot. And then when he finally asked to not suffer anymore, he stopped suffering. So it's just a bit different. I just thought that was interesting. It's not what we're going into today. This isn't your seminary podcast. Or it could be. I don't know.
Let us know in the comments.
So we're not talking about suffering necessarily. Although to struggle sometimes involves suffering, but that's not what we're particularly talking about. So we're talking about struggling. So I guess if we're looking to put together a bit of a spectrum here to talk about virtue, right? If you look at Job, some might say that Job's virtuous, but not because of the suffering necessarily. Some might maybe say that it's because he persevered and kept his faith, and that was a struggle to do, you might say. But to get this out of a, you know, wishy-washy, I want pure terms. If you see a person lying in the sun baking into a, like just baking for like no reason, and they're just purely suffering, that's not very virtuous. Like, most people wouldn't look at that and say, yeah, look at that virtuous person there just baking to a crisp in the hot sun, who could easily just get up and move. But
what if he's doing it for the gram?
That's the real struggle. But you get my point. Like, raw suffering for suffering's sake is not virtuous. Like, we would not look at someone who is just suffering like that and say that makes them a good person because they are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's not what we're talking about in this case anyway. So if you do think that way, we're not talking about that. We're talking about from the perspective of the struggle. That person isn't struggling. They're straight up suffering, and there's no virtue in that. There's no virtue that's derived from struggling in that way.
Suffering.
I'm trying to see how I want to phrase this. If you could take all the virtue points and cut them into categories, right? So like, you got four virtue suffering points, depending on your belief system, or you get eight virtue struggle points. The person baking in the sun might get virtue suffering points, but they are not getting virtue struggle points, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to help separate the two, because I do feel like I'm going over in my head how I would be talking about this to someone.
If you see a couple of guys in a field zapping each other with stun guns for fun, they're not struggling.
No, they're just suffering.
They're just suffering.
Yeah, there's no virtue in that suffering, but there is virtue in having fun and friendship.
Yes.
Okay, so that's one end maybe, which is just raw suffering. Okay. Then maybe on the other end, you have something like the struggle is real struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Where world problems type struggle.
Yes.
The mo money, mo problem struggle, you know, that kind of thing, or suffering from success, where maybe someone is just, it's more complaining really than struggling. You're just being minorly inconvenienced, right?
Sure.
So this would be examples.
And I think we write that off as not particularly virtuous because it's not really struggling.
Right.
It's just complaining. That's why we have names for it, like first world problems, right? It's like, this isn't a real problem. It's just something that you did to yourself because, you know, oh no, my iPhone screen is cracked.
Yeah. Or I'm at this 5-star restaurant and they ran out of shallots, so they're going to have to use onions instead.
Right.
Oh no, poor baby.
Woe is me.
Woe is me, yeah. So let's find our ideal candidate for the struggle. Like, what would be, you think, a good virtuous candidate for struggle?
Well, I think if I just use the phrase struggling people, a certain image comes to mind.
Yeah.
A poor person of some description.
Yeah. To me in particular, if you were to say that, I imagine like a working class poor person who there's food on the table.
But barely.
There is food, maybe not good food, but there's food on the table. There's a roof over the head. But the bank account is empty.
Right. Paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah. The bank account is empty and the first of the month can't get here any faster. And all of that is begotten by working maybe more than the typical work amount per week.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is the struggle.
Right.
If you were to say a struggling person, like I can think of people that I know personally who are in that spot. And like, yeah, I would definitely say that was a struggling person at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's one. So do we consider that person virtuous and why?
Interestingly, I've known several people like that. Some of them I would say yes and some no.
Okay.
But now we're having to dissect out where does that virtue coming from.
Right.
But by the nature that there is someone that I've known personally that I judge to not be virtuous but was also struggling, I think that kind of helps eliminate struggling as a source of virtue.
Mm.
Or as a virtuous quality. I think maybe, as we looked at when we were looking at Job, the biblical figure, the thing that we find virtuous in the struggle is not that you are struggling, but that you are not giving up in the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
It is virtuous to persevere. Like perseverance, I would say, is virtuous. And that's something that really does come out in the struggle. Because if you stopped persevering in the struggle, it becomes suffering.
Right.
Purely.
Well, and it becomes failure.
Right.
And sometimes there's a kind of, well, no, I wouldn't say that there is a virtue in failure. I think the people that we praise who have failed many times are the ones who persevered and eventually got it, whatever they're trying to do.
Well, okay, let's work on that though.
Mm-hmm.
Say there is a person that has been attempting to, you know, surmount Mount Everest.
Okay.
Right. So they start out in their 20s, they start trying to climb it and they get about halfway up and they fail. They're not able to do it. So they go back every year for 20 years and finally on the 21st year, they die halfway up the slope.
Mm-hmm.
They never succeeded, but was their struggle still virtuous? Was it the did they really ever have to succeed to have persevered?
No,
I don't think so. Now, there's the interesting question. His climbing partner, who had the same problem, made it to the top that year. And if all you know is that both of these individuals failed to climb Mount Everest 20 times, and then one of them died trying to do it the 21st time, and the other succeeded in climbing the mountain, or Mount Everest to the top on the 21st time, do they have equal virtue from the perspective of struggling or perseverance, I guess, in this case?
Maybe.
It's an interesting thing.
One consider. Is more impressive than the other for actually having done it.
Yeah.
But that's not exactly what we're talking about.
No. I think there is virtue that can be gained from success.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that. That's not the topic of this episode, though. But you said maybe. Where's your mind going on that?
I think it's specific.
Arguably, one had to persevere a little longer because they didn't die halfway up in the last attempt.
Right, they persevered longer, but one persevered harder, maybe. A little too hard. But I don't know, it also like, okay, if we really wanted to get down to the details, it's okay, how did he die, right? Because if he died because he made a stupid, you know, like greedy mistake, right? Like he was climbing up a rock face or something like that and he knew it was risky and he went for it anyway and then he fell down and died, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little less virtuous than sticking out the harder route that his partner took to make it or whatever.
We'll say they took the exact same path, mm-hmm. but one of them died and froze to death because it was just slightly colder a few feet over and the other one almost froze to death, or maybe one of them had a few extra pounds on the other and that's what I was thinking
is like one of them was in poorer health and just couldn't handle it. Yeah.
But it wasn't a failing that he made necessarily. You could argue that it was a failure in preparation, but...
Right, he just wasn't ready and tried it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say, for the sake of this example, he prepared as much as you could reasonably prepare. Things just happened to go sideways. You know, it's always a risk, right? It was always a risk every time the attempt was made. You know, most people may have survived it, but it was just unfortunate that he did not.
Mm-hmm.
We'll say, to keep it fair, I guess.
I don't know. It's a hard question.
While we're thinking about it, can I provide another example? Say the first time these two guys attempted it, they went with a third friend and he surmounted it the first time and then never went back for any of the additional climbs.
Right. He was good enough.
He did it the first time. So
he didn't struggle then. Yeah.
No, he did. Just he did all his struggling in one trip.
Right. He didn't struggle as much as the others.
Maybe you could say that. But I was going to ask, on the 21st ascent for the one that makes it, at that snapshot moment in time, you have this person and then you have his friend who surmounted it the first time. Take the snapshot moment when he reaches the peak. Mm-hmm. At that moment in time, are they equally virtuous? Assuming all other things about, you know, purely from this perspective, because in that moment, they have both achieved the same thing. Mm-hmm. They have struggled through
what it takes to climb Mount Everest. Yeah.
Correct. Are they equally virtuous for having done it, or is the one who failed multiple times then finally succeeded more virtuous?
I think the tendency is to favor the one who failed but persevered. Yeah.
Yeah, persevered. So
it's the perseverance.
So this sets up a very interesting moral equation mm-hmm. for struggle virtue points where... You have to multiply, before we go into that, but we still agree that the guy who died still had some virtue for having persevered, even though he never succeeded, right?
Right.
So, in purely the calculation for, like, virtue, if you had to look at it that way, it's essentially struggle points. How many struggle points have you accumulated? The more you struggle, and... you continue to struggle because you continue to persevere, you accumulate more struggle points. So say, for example, we attributed a struggle point for every step taken to get to the top of the mountain, for example. Mm-hmm. And we'll say these gentlemen were taking the same route every time and roughly the same gait, or the exact same gait, so we know...
They're just as tall as the other.
Exactly. Does it... I don't think it tracks that one has 20 times more... virtue points mm-hmm. than the other. That doesn't feel right. So maybe there's a diminishing return. Like if you continue to struggle at the same thing, there is a curve. There's a point where if you continue to struggle with it and continue to persevere, maybe it is less virtuous.
I almost feel like you only get one, right? You either... Okay, there's a point. You get a point for doing the thing, for climbing the mountain and getting to the summit.
Okay.
And then you also get a point for having to work for it, for having to persevere. I almost feel like we don't even put it into the calculation how long you struggled versus somebody else. It was the fact that you You failed and needed to try again.
But do you get a point for every time you failed and then tried again?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It doesn't seem that way to me anyway.
All right.
Because if we said it was like two tries versus three tries, I don't think anyone cares about the difference between those. But one try versus two tries, we kind of care a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say so. But what about two tries versus 20 times? 20 tries. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of perseverance.
It is. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. And obviously, I think you're smart enough to know where I would be going with this, which is, why would you not just drag it out as long as you could?
Right.
You know?
So I thought of a parallel example.
Sure.
Let's bring up a time-honored American historical figure. Thomas Edison.
Okay.
So the tale goes about Thomas Edison inventing the light bulb, in which he opened his dictionary and started in the A's and started trying different materials to make the light bulb filament out of until he found something that worked.
Allegedly.
Right, that's how the story goes. Probably didn't happen that way.
We're going to take the sake of mythos for this one, because it's an example. We don't need to be historically correct with this.
So anyway, so he's doing this, right? And he's going through all the things, and eventually he finds it. But what about... Okay, now I can think of like some parallel nobodies who failed to invent a light bulb, but were trying. Mm-hmm. So one hypothetical nobody, he didn't have the same strategy of trying all the things, but he had a list of things, and he never found one that worked. But he tried and tried and tried, but never found one.
Yeah.
And then another failure who. Rather than trying different things until he finds one that works, he's just really, really convinced that this one thing will work if only he tweaks it a little bit, and he keeps trying the same thing essentially over and over and over, and it never works because it just can't.
Right. Like, he thinks it's this one element, and maybe it's just an alloy or a treatment he has to do too.
Right. I'm right there, even though it's just impossible to make it out of that thing.
Yeah, I will make an aluminum filament light bulb.
Right.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. It's interesting. I think there has to be some virtue that all of them have for persevering.
Mm-hmm.
I think we both agree that they all have some virtue points from the struggle. And maybe it's not that you get extra struggle points for success, but succeeding in and of itself is a virtue that's separate from this, and maybe that makes it easier. Because it's hard for us to look at someone who's virtuous and break... give me the heuristics on their virtue, right? Mm-hmm. But if we were trying to do that, I would think that we would need to split it up. Because they all continue to try and dedicate their time to something that, if they would have been successful... And also, with all the knowledge they had at the time, could have worked reasonably, right? They weren't wasting their time. Like, don't get me wrong, there may have been people who thought they were wasting their time, but it wasn't, like, evident that they were wasting their time, you know? At each attempt, I think they're accumulating equal amounts of virtue from the struggle. So I think the thing that would make the most sense to me is that purely from the perspective of the struggle, they're all equally virtuous.
Okay.
I have to say that my opinion on that, but I'm also maybe sectioning off part of it, which is the succeeding in and of itself is its own virtue,
right?
Like, being accomplished is a virtue. Mm-hmm. Like, actually achieving what you set out to do is a separate virtue than the perseverance that it took. And if you struggled and then achieved something, you get two virtue points. Mm-hmm. If we're just assuming everything's the same. If you tried but never succeeded, you get a virtue point. And if you're just good at things and you succeeded, it's still a virtue to have succeeded, but you don't get the struggle point too. So if you wanted to min-max your virtue points, you would... And I think this makes sense.
I think it does make sense. And I can think of another context in which we do something like this. Sports.
Yeah.
We praise champions for being the best, right? We do. They beat all the other teams in a tournament, presumably, right? So they're better than everybody else, at least this season, we decided.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody also likes an underdog.
That's true.
Right? We want to believe that someone who's, you know, like a team that's never won the championship, well, if they do it, that would be really impressive, and we would be very proud of them for doing that.
Yeah, like if you're watching the like three-time world champs versus team that hasn't won in 100 years, mm-hmm. you kind of want to root for the team that hasn't won in 100 years because it just, there's a karmic justice kind of element to that, I think, that we feel is right. But
this is why anyone likes the Chicago Cubs. Anyway,
the only reason anyone likes the Chicago Cubs. I will say out there, ladies and gentlemen, if you can find you a partner that likes the Chicago Cubs, hang on to them because they can put up with they can put up with a lot of disappointment. We'll say that much. But it's because if the back-to-back-to-back world champions win, they get to just add one more virtue point to their pool. Whereas, and I think we all, this maybe is a separate thing, but I think we all like to see virtue points getting doled out, right? And the more virtue that's getting doled out, the more happy we are when we see it. Even if what we consider to be virtuous is different in different reference frames, I think one thing that's kind of fairly universal is that if we witness something virtuous, we tend to approve of it, even if it's just by our own value system and not a universal one, right? But assuming everyone has the same value system where persevering is a virtuous and winning is virtuous, the team that's the underdog will get to see two virtue points given out instead of one mm-hmm. today. And so that's maybe the tug to make us want to see that more. And that might even be strong enough for us to overcome like a favoritism that we have sometimes. I think it also gets really, really interesting when you're looking at situations in which something that like has never happened in a sporting event. So say, for example, instead of it being the 3-time world champions, they're the 4-time world champions and no one's ever won it back to back to back to back to back 5 times. Mm-hmm. Now it's like you're achieving this, but you're also achieving a record, you know? And so it can add to the excitement because either way we're going to see multiple virtue points going out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. If you're a promoter for an event like that, you know, you're thinking about it, maybe not from the perspective of virtue, but excitement. And if we correlate the two things of watching virtue being achieved, you know, and excitement, and that equivalates to excitement, you would be really looking to see a matchup like that, I think. And I think this works out too. If you were to think about this maybe from a evolutionary perspective, like we've talked a lot, I think, about how moral systems are kind of a we decided thing. Mm-hmm. Even if you declare and or axiomatically say it comes from like an objective place, which is something we talked about not that long ago, it kind of doesn't matter. I think anyone can acknowledge that better virtue systems lead to better societies. I think we can all at least agree there. And then we go on to bicker about, well, where do virtues come from? Mm-hmm. So if you were to have a virtue system which purely like rewarded the struggle, people would never go out of the struggle because then they wouldn't get the virtue anymore. If we had a system that only valued success, why would anyone ever attempt anything that they were pretty sure they were going to fail at, right? Like Edison. If there may be riches for success, but part of it also is that there's virtue in attempting, right? If you're looking at it purely from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And if you could just do it, and then the other thing with this, with your example of the three guys, if you could just do it, or that I mentioned when you were talking about the two other people along with Edison, mm-hmm. if you could just do it, you get some virtue for having accomplished it, sure, but we want people to be advancing. We want people who can just do that to go on and do something else that they would normally have to struggle for. Not for the sake of struggling, but because it adds to the number of successes that you can have, and it keeps you from just camping out in the circle of things you're just already good at. You know what I mean? I think that it is very advantageous to reward people for doing things, as John F. Kennedy would say, because they are hard,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I think that's kind of what's being discussed, is that, you know, it's really easy to just kind of rest on your laurels and just keep doing the same thing and winning over and over again and succeeding. But it's better, ultimately, for us as people, when we don't just do that. We continue to push forward and we try other things, even if it means the struggle, right? But if you only put the value on the victory, people will be very, I think, conservative about what they will even attempt to try. Because maybe if it's not exactly true that we put vice on failure, it's kind of an implicit thing mm-hmm. where if you try and if you fail, it's not good. It's not virtuous. Even if we don't explicitly call it a vice, it's a waste of time. You know, if there's nothing to be gained in it. So we had to have some way to reward people who failed without them just stopping there.
Mm-hmm.
And perseverance, I think, is the answer. Is we reward that. So I don't think we should ever reward struggle for struggle's sake. We should reward the perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, I don't think that's the reason you wanted to do this episode, necessarily. Is there something else you maybe wanted to get at about this with the struggle and the virtue of the struggle? Because we've got time.
I didn't have a particular thing in mind. I think the thing that got me thinking about it at all was something, really just like a comment that I heard somebody make. That there is virtue in the struggle.
Yeah. Did you have like the full context of what they were saying and what they meant by it though? And was the example that we covered, did we cover a similar example to that today?
Well, we briefly mentioned like the working class person who was struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah.
I think that was closer to the context for the comment that I heard. I think the context was like, you know, whether it is okay. All right, I have a parallel thing that I also read about today. Okay, so to finish the thought, the context of the thing was like whether it is virtuous to like live on your own instead of having roommates, basically. Okay. But of course, it's more of a struggle to do that because you must be financially independent.
Right.
But moving on from that, well, I guess directly related to that, should we consider it virtuous to be totally independent?
To be totally independent or be capable of independence? Because I think they're different.
I think they're different, but
you can't know one without demonstrating it.
Yeah, exactly. Our culture expects a demonstration.
Yeah. I think that you get 1 point for demonstrating your independence.
Okay. Hypothetical example.
Okay.
All right. You have a good paying job, enough that you could buy a house and live on your own or whatever, whatever cultural things we expect you to do to demonstrate your independence. But you live at home with your parents.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. That's a good example. Okay. There's a lot of other factors that go into that, I think. To me, and this is what's sticky about it, right? Because at first I'm thinking, why is the demonstration so important? Well, because morals are kind of for each other, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just for ourselves. It's for others, right? Like, for example, and to pull another analog from the Christian faith, it's not enough to believe. You have to get baptized. You got to demonstrate it. The baptism right. doesn't make you necessarily a better person, necessarily.
No, but it shows everyone that you mean it.
Yes, exactly. Or at least in most interpretations. I'm sure there's someone out there who's like, well, actually, you know, ours, whatever. But
Catholics probably.
And they've got spices. Anyway.
The Catholics do not have spices. They are way too bland for that.
I've had a wafer before. I don't know what you're talking about. And this is hard. We're going to
start a spiced communion wafer company.
Spiced communion wafer. It's too sinful. Immanuel Kant would not be happy about that. Talk about someone who's suffering for suffering's sake.
Well, we just make them really spicy. Now they're all about the suffering.
Yeah, it's just like the one chip challenge wafers for, for communion.
Yes. All right, guys, we're here at Mass.
Do the one wafer challenge. No wine.
Can you handle the body of Christ?
The body of Christ. That would be our that would be our slogan. Oh, I love that. Oh, can we please? Oh, donate if
dear you listeners, please make this happen because we're probably not going to.
No, I'm gonna start a GoFundMe for it though. We'll see what happens. Okay. Back to the independence thing. I'm also a little biased about this one because I absolutely wanted to be independent. Mm-hmm. I detested the thought of going back home and living with my parents. But that probably has little to do with the fact that I felt like I was a better person for being independent.
Mm-hmm.
Necessarily.
You just didn't want to be in the environment anymore.
Correct. But it was both. I didn't want to be in that environment anymore, but I also thought I could. Mm. I was like, I can do this. And I want to. And I can. And I'm going to. And I'm going to be proud of it because I did it. And it will be a struggle and I will be proud, you know. But not because it was a struggle, but because I'm doing it and mm-hmm. I'm happy, you know. So that being said, I do think I think all that should matter is the ability. Could you be independent? I think what comes into question there is how do you know you could be until you do it, right? Like, certainly you can be reasonably sure without ever attempting, just like you can be reasonably sure that, you know, someone can ride a bike based on their age, perhaps, and knowing how they grew up and everything, because it's not an unfair assumption, I think, to know this. I actually don't know how common bike riding is. Maybe it's just common to me, but like, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a common thing.
I feel
thing.
Like it's common, but I'm also surprised sometimes to hear that people don't know.
Yeah. But it's common enough. Let me put it this way. It's common enough that if someone told me they knew how to ride a bike, I wouldn't make them get on a bike and show me.
Right. Yes. I would assume. Yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah.
And so, that being said, if I took a good look at you and inventory, you know, you're like, yeah, I make enough money to live on my own. I know how to cook. I know how to do my laundry. You know, I pretty much do all these things at home already. And I'm of a certain age and certain level of responsibility, I would look at you and go, look, yeah, you could probably be on your own if you really wanted to. And then if you said to me, I'm not though, because it makes more financial sense, I'm saving money by doing this, I'm like, okay, that outweighs it. You're choosing to live smarter and not cave to just prove that you could. So I don't necessarily, but the capability is the important thing there. Like, I think that the ability to be independent, even if it's not something that you necessarily choose to do, is important. And that's more about self-reliance. Like, it's a willingness to be of a certain way as not to be a potential burden on others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think maybe that also factors into it, because a person who could be independent also likely is not very much of a burden on the people they're staying with, right? I think more often than not, the inverse comes up when people foresee you being a burden, and instead of wanting to punish you being a burden, because in the family case, maybe the parents don't want to give up that burden, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a different type of toxic relationship.
It is. You instead would say, well, it's because you can't, or, you know, you should feel bad because you couldn't. Be independent. And it's because being self-reliant and having the ability to not burden others is a virtue, which is another thing that I think makes a lot of sense when you think about moral systems that benefit the society that holds them. It is unrealistic to assume that everyone will always be independent or that everyone could be independent. But if it's a virtue that most people strive for and enough people could be independent, that indicates generally that you are running at a surplus of, you have a surplus of, you know, goods and effort, that there's enough for everybody. And so that when you inevitably do have a time and when someone's not able to be independent, it's not too much for the rest of us to handle. Because if 99 people out of a village of 100 were independent and able to be self-sufficient, some fraction of that was going to be beyond self-sufficient and maybe doing well. And for the one who isn't, spreading that one who isn't amongst the other 99 as a sharing that burden is very easy. As opposed to if 49% of the people were not self-sufficient, 55 were, you know, it gets a bit harder. So if you're thinking about it from like a group perspective, having independence be a virtue, I think leads more towards societies that are able to actually take care of those who aren't able to be independent, you know? So yeah, I would say it's more about the ability than actualizing that ability necessarily. I think the virtue for actualizing that, and that ability comes more from just either could have been a burden but chose not to, right? It's it's not so much that you're gaining virtue by being independent, it's that you're not taking on vice from being a burden. You know what I mean? Because we also don't necessarily want to unfairly bias against people who have to be a burden, because there are some people that maybe it's for reasons they have no control over, or whatever, you know,
maybe you're disabled, right? You just physically cannot take care of yourself. Right.
So if you put the vice on opting to be a burden as opposed to just being a burden,
yeah,
you know, I think it's the same for independence. We don't put the virtue on being independent. We put the virtue on choosing independence when it's advantageous to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, kind of the inverse. I thought, just to take us back to the original topic for a moment, we were going to talk maybe a little bit about how people who are in the struggle get a pass sometimes. So if we're talking more about, like, let's look at your moral index or your virtue index or your net, your gross adjusted virtue or something like that. People who are in the struggle may be getting a pass for certain behaviors, right?
That okay.
If they weren't in the struggle, we would shame them for. So, one example that I can think of is, I have known people who, because they were blue collar, hard working folks, and they were in the struggle, if they were being a bit rowdy on a Saturday night down at the bar, people would give them a pass for that, when that type of behavior normally would have been not acceptable. But it's like, hey, these are hardworking people. They're blowing off steam from the struggle. Give them a break, for example.
Okay.
There may be better examples, but that's one that I can think of off the top of my head. So if you think about getting a pass, this also maybe has a lot to say about how your virtue system works. Is virtue a currency that you can spend? That's honestly probably an episode by itself.
Right.
Is, can you exchange virtue for vice? And is it about maintaining neutrality, or is it about maximizing virtue or minimizing vice? Like, I think it's a solo episode. But in this
transactional case, morality. Yeah.
Ooh, you can put that on the topic stack for an episode name. That'd be pretty good. I know. Oh, it's the rabbit hole. It's like when you watch lightning strike sand and it makes those neat little glass root looking structures. That's how my mind just went with all of the different things I could have talked about with that. Not today. For another time. But what are your thoughts about that? Like, do you think it's because perhaps there's virtue to that that goes around, or is that just a different thing? Like, do we, you know, how does our expectations and standards of people, like our moral or moral standards of people, change based on the struggle? And does it have to do with the virtue they gain from being in the struggle or not?
I don't know that even is, like, us giving them a pass because they are otherwise virtuous. I think that is a post hoc rationalization for holding certain people to a lower standard because we expect less of them.
Interesting. So let's talk about that broadly, though, just from the perspective of the struggle. is that something that is a offset to the virtue you might get by being in the struggle? Is that we lower our expectations of you, and is that a good or a bad thing? Like, I am of the opinion that having low expectations of people is offensive to some degree.
Right.
Are you who have the, who are bearing the lower expectation, right? So like, if you have a low expectation of me, I should be upset about that.
Right. It's a judgment that I'm casting on you that you cannot live to the higher standard.
Correct. So, but it doesn't always seem to be that way. Like, for example, if I was a rowdy blue collar worker, maybe I don't want you to hold me to your standard to keep it down and be calm and quiet on a Saturday night when I want to just be rowdy because it's been a long week. Maybe I want to be, having been there, maybe, maybe I want to get rowdy, you know what I mean? Because it's fun. And so I keep, you can keep your standards. And here's my excuse. I was working this week.
Congratulations, you did the bare minimum that we all do.
Yeah. Well, then maybe a better example, you know, I've seen this a lot too. If there are two parents and you have a child that participates in some type of a sporting event, it is generally considered a virtue for both parents to be there to support their children. But if I was working and I couldn't make it, that's an excuse. But that's one that we expect. We accept it. We don't hold you to that.
I think
same
then
standard.
We get into other virtue territories of sacrifice.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. The virtue of sacrifice. Interesting. Do we have time just briefly? I think we have time to dip into that. Okay. So we've talked about this a little while ago. I don't remember what episode it was. We talked a little bit about something related to this. I think it was spending time with people or something like that. Or what was it?
Was it the Friends episode?
Maybe. It may have been the Friends episode. I don't think so, though.
Oh.
Okay. I'm a blue collar working man. No, it was the work episode, the virtue of work.
Okay.
I don't know if we called it that, but it was something like that.
Yeah, we probably didn't call it that.
I think it actually wasn't about work. It was about idleness and, wasting time. That was the episode.
Wasting time. Got it.
Yep. That was the episode. Okay. So I was working and I didn't make it to my kid's baseball game or whatever. Well, it's probably not good that I did that, you know? And I think the attitude about me, the guy who chose to work instead of attend his kid's baseball game, might change if my attitude was, no, I would rather be at work.
Yes, it's, yes, we recognize it as a virtuous sacrifice if you would rather be there at the game, but you were at work to provide for your family.
Should've...
versus neglecting your children to be at work instead, which is a vice.
Yeah. Shoulda, coulda, woulda, though, because how does that square with what we talked about with demonstrating your ability versus just being capable? Right? I could have been at the game. I've known plenty of people who are real diligent about their work. And you know how many times they could have been at that game if they really wanted to? They could have been there. But we take them at their word that they had to. They had to work late. Sorry, I had to be there. Like, I think the most scathing critique my mother ever gave me for anything that I ever did is I missed...
I know where this is going.
I missed some event. I don't even remember what it was. It was maybe a birthday or something. But I missed... something that she wanted me to go to. And later on, after the fact, when she was upset at me, I told her that I wanted to be there, but, and she cut me off and said, if you really wanted to be there, you would have been there. And I was like, scathing. And I think she's kind of right.
Yeah, not wrong.
She's not wrong. And in that particular case, she's was very, very right. I actually didn't want to be there. But instead of having the courage to just say that I didn't want to be there and give my reasons, which were mine to have, and it was my choice to be there, I instead opted for something else.
Mm-hmm. You made an excuse. Yeah.
I did. Now, I guess to keep this in the struggle, if the excuse was one in which I struggled for, is it different than one that I would have just, like, for example, instead of going to the kids' sports game, I was working, that's one. But what if I was, I really needed to get in that tea time.
Mm-hmm.
One's a leisure activity, one's a struggle.
Right.
Obviously, I think most people would be like, well, it's really bad if you miss your kids, if you fail in this obligation.
You missed an important event in your kids', you know, childhood to go play a game. Yeah.
But if you were struggling, if you were in the heat of the struggle, maybe we'll give you a pass,
mm-hmm.
you know?
It's more relatable, understandable.
Even if it's unnecessary?
No. If it is necessary.
How do you know?
Well, you don't.
Yeah. But you assume,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And that's why people get away with it. Because it's maybe considered...
Well, yeah, because usually we don't have such intimate knowledge of our acquaintances' private lives to know how necessary being at work is.
Sure. I think, you know, I think the deepest assumption you can make about that is that, well, if they missed the game for work, it's probably because they needed to work because they needed the money. They needed the job. They would have maybe lost their job if they didn't. They would have not had enough money if they didn't do it. And in a way, it was a greater good for their family for them to miss the game and work than to be at the thing.
The benefits outweighed the cost. Yeah.
Right. And we give people the benefit of the doubt that them having a better knowledge than we do of the situation made that calculation and it came out.
Right.
You know. This does creep though back into that territory of prove it, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I don't know. Or maybe it's that in that particular case, it borders too much on not my business.
I think that's really what it is that, yeah, we're normally not in a position to make those judgments without prying into people's private information.
Yeah. Unlike the awarding virtue for the struggle where, well, I guess that's another thing. What good is being in the struggle if people don't know about the struggle?
Mm-hmm.
Do you get your virtue points if you don't go to the struggle and people know about it?
Well, we have those hypothetical inventors that I made up that nobody knows about, who may or may not, they may or may not have been real people. Who knows? There may very well have been someone around the same time who was trying to invent a light bulb and just didn't because Edison did it first.
Yeah.
And we just don't know who they are.
Yeah.
They died without a name.
They died without a name because they never, but that's because they didn't achieve.
Right.
You know, but they still struggled.
Right. And they didn't have a name for any other reason. So we never heard about their struggle.
If anything, I think that maybe tells you a little bit about how much we value struggling versus success.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine you're one of those guys' best friends and you don't know why he's not hanging out anymore or why he isn't coming to the bar or, you know,
because he's in his basement
working on
his experiments. Yeah.
Right. So you don't know that he's struggling. I think you would have a right to be upset that your friend was being a bad friend until you find out about the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, okay. I think my issue with this, and this is where I thought maybe you were going to go with this, is that given the advent of things like social media these days, you can broadcast your struggle.
Oh, my goodness. No, I didn't even think of that.
That's where I thought you were going to end up going with this, is that what good is it? Like, man, I'm struggling right now. Man, why am I not posting about my struggle? Because people love the struggle, you know? And what sucks about that is the way it's set up. It's like an exploit.
Mm-hmm.
People can't give you their virtue points for being in the struggle unless they know about the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not very virtuous to just tell people about your struggle or to want to be boastful about your struggle. Or at least to me, it's not.
Right.
I think you know, but I think to some people, maybe it is.
Maybe.
Maybe. Like, I'm thinking back to when I was in college, and there was a keen icebreaker moment. I don't know if you ever had to do any of those, where they take a bunch of strangers and put you in a room, and they play a stupid game to kind of break the ice and get people to know each other a little bit.
Yeah, once or twice I had to do that.
Right. One of the questions that was asked during one of these icebreakers was, when was the last time you cried?
Mm.
Now, that's a telling question a bit, because oftentimes it may or may not indicate that you were in the struggle, because we normally don't cry for no reason. Sometimes we do, but like most of the time we don't. And this is avoiding, I think this whole time we've managed to avoid this whole sidestep question of are each our own struggles, and how what makes it a struggle might be different.
Mm-hmm.
Like we kind of bumped on it with the Edison, not the Edison thing, but the Everest thing. Maybe the guy who climbed it the first time, he was just in really good shape. So yeah, it was right. Easier
for him to climb. Or had already climbed every other mountain.
Yeah. Like
and this is just not a really big step from there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he climbed Kilimanjaro like 2 months ago. And so he's just like running the gamut now, you know, whereas these two guys are like, we're going to go to this and do it first, you know. Not the point, I guess, right now, but like, I distinctly remember that question and being very uncomfortable with it, because I don't like people knowing my business, and I don't cry very often because I didn't want to be given something to cry about, you know, growing up. So to me, you know, if you're crying, it's very serious, you know? And so it's like, I'm not prepared to meet strangers for the first time and go into my struggle.
Talk about that, yeah.
Right. But it was kind of surprising to me how many people were more than happy to share their struggle in that moment.
Mm.
Because in that moment, no one was going to interrupt their struggle. No one had the same level of intimate detail about their struggle. And even if someone had had the same struggle, they weren't the same person. They don't know how hard it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
And to sit there and pretend like it should be easy because of some advantage you have makes you look like a real prick. So mm-hmm. I think there's something about that, that people, when they get the chance to talk about their struggle, oh boy, here comes the soapbox and the measuring tape, and we're gonna we're going to lay it out, and we're gonna measure each other's struggles up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that personally. I hate the one-upsmanship of you don't even know what hot is, or you know, like
yeah, that's a mild form of that.
It's a mild form of it, but yeah, I also feel like maybe some people find vindication for their struggle in the boost they get from being able to talk about it. But that's kind of a drug to me. You got to be careful. Like, I think it can be addicted. I think people can get addicted to the struggle.
Well, people certainly get addicted to complaining.
Yeah, but if you can't complain, if you're not in the struggle no more.
Right.
I think there's a big difference. Well, maybe not a big difference, but I think there is a difference, you know? And so, I don't know. To me, that's a weird thing that I thought you were going to go with that I think is a problem. I think I don't think we should change rewarding people who struggle, giving out virtue for persevering,
mm-hmm.
but
merely being in the struggle
is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think the value of success needs to outweigh the value of the struggle. But likewise, maybe the trend in caring more about the struggle goes and coincides with the overwhelming access to those who have succeeded and the fact that succeeding is getting harder. You know, for example, let's see who can run the fastest between two points. There was a time when records were getting broken all the time, because people are still figuring out how to just run fast, because now there's an incentive to do that. And I'm not saying records aren't still being broken, but I would argue that it's a lot harder to break the 50 meter sprint record now than it was in 1958, when most, like in the Olympics, where most Olympians back at that time had day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't professional athletes, you know? Whereas now, you know, if you're trying to write a book, if you may have been the only person that you knew that was writing a book at the time. When you finally persevered through and succeeded, you felt special for doing that. But now you can go online and see there are entire forums of people who are all working on books and struggling together. So your struggle feels both, your struggle feels less unique, but that's kind of okay, because it's still, you still have the hard for me dynamic, but succeeding in writing a book is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
You get to become a published author. Good for you. Join the ranks of millions, and you feel a lot less special for succeeding. So maybe that's why the emphasis on the struggle has become more, has maybe started to grow outside of its lane and overtake the glory of the achievement, because you're bombarded by everyone's achievements every day, even if they're minor. You're much more cognizantly aware that your achievement of that thing is not as unique as you thought it was, and that makes us devalue it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the value never really was about how special it was that you did it. It was always in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I don't know. That's a different thing. But I think that that's probably the last thing I have to comment on when it comes to the virtue of the struggle, is that, yes, there is virtue in persevering, not in struggling. And I do think there are diminishing returns on perseverance that don't really actualize until you succeed, but they will only ever actualize into like two virtue points, maybe slightly more if it was harder for you and you persevered for longer and eventually succeeded. But I don't know, I would view it almost as a tragedy, the person who persevered their whole life to do something and never did it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not virtuous for that. I can put a little bit of virtue into the perseverance, but it is more of a tragedy to me in hindsight. Once you're gone and no one cares about how you feel about, well, you cannot care about how anyone feels about your struggle, because you don't, it's mm-hmm. over, right? I think most people sitting in your funeral parlor would probably not be too happy or think highly of you for that, perhaps. So I don't know.
I think it probably depends on the specifics of what you were trying to do.
Sure.
Whether people thought that your goal was virtuous in and of itself, maybe.
Sure. And I'm speaking extremely generally about that. But I feel like in any case, if you took whatever it was you were trying to achieve, post-mortem, if you had not achieved it versus post-mortem, the same thing, but you did achieve it, people mm-hmm. would talk differently about it.
Certainly.
Yep. So, yeah. I'm sure we could go deeper into that, but I think that pretty much speaks for itself. And I'm drilling into the other topics we mentioned and don't want to border into those too much. Mm-hmm. Keep the territory. Until next time, philosophers.
Philosophers.
If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.